Welcome back to Alternative Realities. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. One of our most frequently asked questions is about the state of the commercial real estate market. While apocalyptic headlines about office have soured perceptions of the market as a whole, it's actually an exciting time for other sectors. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Chad Treadway, Head of Real Estate Americas, to discuss the opportunities he's seeing in the market. Well, thank you for joining us, Chad.
Thank you for having me.
Well, to start with, can you tell me a little bit about your background and the types of investments your team is focused on?
Absolutely. So they always say there's no place like home. I've been at JP Morgan two times. The first time was from 2008 until 2021. We built the largest real estate lending business in the United States. The portfolio is now over $150 million. In 2021, I left to launch my own private equity firm, Trio Investment Group. And about a year ago, JP Morgan acquired Trio Investment Group and brought me back to the firm to lead our investment management business in the United States for real estate. Our team is roughly 250 people all around the United States, and we focus on the $70 billion of real estate that we own.
And so can you tell me a little bit about the difference between directly investing in real estate and then just getting some exposure through public markets?
Absolutely. So first, real estate is the largest asset class in the world. When you look at real estate, we touch it, we feel it, it's all around us, which is exciting. Investors can invest through public REITs, or they can invest in non-traded REITs or privately. If you think about the stock market and REITs, it's going to offer more liquidity, but it's also going to offer more volatility. Private markets, which is where we tend to focus, are amazing because you can get great values right now. In fact, we've seen REITs up roughly 35% kind of from their previous peak. And what's exciting is private market real estate is still down 25%. So it really represents the best risk-adjusted return today. And as we look at our long-term capital market assumptions, value-add real estate and core real estate are some of the top opportunities for investors today.
And you know, looking at you mentioned housing. One of the things that interests me as an economist is there's been a chronic shortage of housing for years in the United States. How come builders aren't moving in to fix this? I mean, why is there still this shortage?
A number of things have happened. So depending on which study you look at, we're 4 to 7 million housing units short in the United States. And if you just think back in history, back to the Great Recession, there was overbuilding in housing. But then what happened? The market bust, and it was really difficult and it was terrible. So a lot of developers at that time closed up shop. And then going fast forward to COVID, it was tough to find labor. People couldn't work. And then you add on the fact that entitlements can be difficult. So building in a place like California, whether it's San Francisco or LA, or building in a place like New York or New Jersey is incredibly difficult to get additional zoning, to get housing entitled. And so therefore you're stuck where you've got a lot of demand. So every generation has needed more and more housing, but you can't fill that demand. And it started all the way back in the Great Recession back in 2008.
So no builders, no workers, and difficult to get a zoning. So that leaves a shortage. And so that's obviously why we're interested in the multifamily market, but also in single family homes to own and rent out.
Yeah, so JP Morgan's been very focused on single family for rent. In fact, we actually create supply. So we don't buy houses that are in neighborhoods that are existing. We actually go build our own communities, and we'll deliver 40, 50, 60, 100 houses at a time. For those people that have kids that are listening to this, most kids that are in college today are thinking to themselves, how can I go and afford a house? So what we provide is an opportunity for people to get into a house-like setting. You've got a backyard, you've got a home office. When you have kids, you're going to be in a good school district, but you don't have to pay to rent an apartment. You can almost, you know, have your cake and eat it too by renting a single family house while you save that down payment to buy on a house in the future.
I think that's really interesting because there's this notion out there that somehow in the investor class is mopping up supply. But what we're actually doing is adding supply to the market by building new units that can be rented as opposed to bought to own.
Correct. So JP Morgan, just at a global level, is very focused on allowing people to have that American dream of owning a home one day. So we would never go and buy houses that existed or compete with middle-class families. Our goal is to create more supply. And when you think about it, the average family in America makes roughly $105,000 per year. And if you think about the guidelines that banks typically set, is you want to see that people are renting at less than 30% of their income. So typically we're focused on $2,000 to $2,500 per month for families. It allows them to have a clean, great single family house to rent, but also gives them capacity to save for the future.
That's great. Okay, well, moving from dreams to nightmares, or perhaps not quite nightmares, but certainly the parts of the office space have been a bit of a nightmare, you know, in the wake of COVID. Do you think there's some recovery there?
For everyone listening on the line, just think about your own life, whether you're in LA and you're in traffic, whether you're in New York and you ride Metro North. I came in today on Metro North. There was not a single empty seat on the train, Dr. Kelly. And so I looked up the stats last weekend. Metro North is now back to 75 to 85% of the ridership. JP Morgan office properties are now 85% or more occupied. So office is getting better, but office still has a long way to go. It's really a tale of the haves and the have-nots. For buildings that are well-located, that have amenities for tenants, that are newer, they are being leased and cash flow continues to grow. One of the biggest properties that we own is Century Plaza Towers in Century City, LA. For those of you who have daughters and have seen the Barbie movie like I have, that property is featured in the movie. And the cash flow continues to grow because of the location and the amenity package. Conversely, if you're in an asset that's older, it's suburban, it's not near transportation, those assets are struggling. And the stat that we love to talk about is that the bottom 10% of office assets hold 60% of the vacancy. And so that is really where you're seeing the weakness. And the story for that is still yet to be written. It's going to transform how we think about older office. And that's going to be an opportunity for those that are creative and can figure it out. But that problem will take years to solve.
So Chad, what do you think about industrial?
So let me just tell you a quick story. I was walking down Park Avenue a few weeks ago, and it looked like every vehicle was a delivery truck. It was UPS, Amazon, FedEx. For those of you going home, just look on the freeway. You will see more delivery trucks than ever before. 20 years ago, you had a million delivery vans on the streets. Today, it's four times that. It's over 4 million delivery trucks. So we focused on shallow bay, smaller industrial near population centers. And we have focused on where all of those trucks go at night. For example, when you think about it, Amazon pre-COVID had roughly two dozen places they delivered same day. Today, that's over 100 places they deliver same day. So I've got family in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Even in Kalamazoo, population of 28,000, you can get your shampoo the same day that you order it. So the industrial we focus on has been on logistics-driven, how goods get to you. It's truck terminals. It's shallow bay industrials near you, and it's things that really focus on getting goods to consumers much faster.
So just another part of the evolution of the American consumer.
Exactly right.
I'm also thinking a little bit about retail space, and you know the obvious knock on retail space is, you know, so many people are getting stuff delivered in Amazon boxes to their front door. If people are buying stuff online, what's the outlook for retail space?
So retail has been a fascinating story. In fact, as most people know, retail's really had its challenges starting all the way back to 2015, 2016, 2017. So COVID did a few things for us. One, if you survived COVID and you were a retailer, chances are it's a pretty good site. So you were left with kind of the cream of the crop. But then two, if you go into an office property on Friday afternoon, just look around. Where are people? Chances are they're at the grocery store, they're getting their hair cut, they're getting their nails done, they're at Planet Fitness. So when you think about how we view retail, it's really in two buckets. Bucket one is neighborhood strip centers where people go for goods and services. It's going to the grocery store, it's going to get your hair cut. The other place that we really like retail is in high-end luxury. So if you look at our overall portfolio, the foot traffic is up 6%. From where we were in COVID, but the actual spend is higher by 30%. So what we found was the rich got richer during COVID, and most of us crave experiences, want to go to the grocery store, and want to pay for services. And that's how we play it. So it's really a barbell. In the middle, what we're finding is those assets are struggling. For example, For those people based in New York, the White Plains Mall, the Galleria, is now being converted. It was kind of one of those middle malls, a zombie mall, and it's going to be residential. And so I think we'll see more of that as we move through this cycle.
Okay. Yeah, that's certainly my impression too. In looking at economic data through the pandemic, there has been a move towards more consumer spending on services, but certainly more consumer spending by richer households who've done very well because of asset appreciation in general. Okay, one last question. Given your experience in real estate and working with this category for so long, how do you think it fits into an alternatives portfolio or into a general portfolio? What role can it play?
People never think about this, but real estate really is a risk mitigation tool. So it's not correlated to stocks and bonds. It provides inflation protection, so you get cash flow, which is nice. It's an asset that actually you get paid to own. Every month, people are paying their rent. That rent gets then distributed to the investor, which is phenomenal. And what's nice about it is it's a way to compound wealth over time. So most of the most wealthy people in the United States have real estate holdings in some way, shape, or form. It's great to have a hard asset. It's great to put into a 60-40 portfolio. It's going to add alpha and it's going to reduce your risk. But I think the exciting thing about it is it's something that's so tangible. We're sitting in real estate today. You go home to real estate. As you drive home, you're going to see properties, and it's something we all should invest in.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much, Chad. This has been very enlightening.
Dr. Kelly, thank you.
This content is intended for information only, based on assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.